From pop culture to politics, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when there is a great deal of clarity that is emerging about the charges concerning the FBI investigation of President Trump in the first place. And yes, there are people, there are voices on the left, including on the far left, who are recognizing that this was a problem, that the way the whole investigation originated was problematic. This is not a good day for James Comey. It is not a good day for Andrew McCabe. It is not a good day for people at the FBI who were the originators of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. We will get back to that in a moment. There is also a piece talking about even the extreme left beginning to see some of the impact and some of the actual achievements of the Trump administration. There's a piece in Axios. It's by Ian Millhiser. And the title is What Trump Has Done to the Courts Explained. And of course, they believe that President Trump has trashed the courts. But in the process, I think that every single conservative should read this because it really does highlight the most significant success that President Trump has had during the now going on 3 years that he has been president of the United States. Can you believe it? In January, it'll be 3 years. The piece says, in less than 3 years as president, President Trump has done nearly as much to shape the courts as President Obama did in 8 years. Trump hasn't simply given lots of lifetime appointments to lots of lawyers. He's filled the bench with some of the smartest and some of the most ideologically reliable men and women to be found in the conservative movement. Long after Trump leaves office, these judges will shape American law, pushing it further and further to the right, even if the voters soundly reject Trumpism in 2020. And here is one of my few disagreements with this article, actually, is that he says pushing it further and further to the right. Court issues are not right and left. And the key element that ties together the judges that Trump has appointed to the Supreme Court, to the appellate division, and even to district courts is the idea that courts don't get to decide everything. They don't. Some of it has to be decided in legislatures. Some of it has to be decided by executives. But the idea that courts should make law regarding various aspects of our life is an idea that originalism and strict constructionism rejects. In other words, for a court to overturn the views of a legislator, of a legislature, is a very dubious proposition. Let's start with some raw numbers. This piece in Vox asks, and Vox again comes very clearly from the left. Both Obama and Trump appointed two justices to the Supreme Court, but Trump's impact on the highest court far exceeds Obama's because Trump replaced the relatively moderate conservative justice, Anthony Kennedy, with a hard-line conservative, Brett Kavanaugh. That was after appointing conservative Neil Gorsuch to fill Antonin Scalia's vacant seat. Obama's appointees, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, largely maintained the balance of power on a conservative court, while Trump has shoved that court even further to the right. Okay, anyone who believes that this is an extreme right-wing court isn't paying attention. On the courts of appeal, the final word in the overwhelming majority of federal cases, more than one quarter of active judges already are Trump appointees. In less than 3 years, Trump has named a total of 48 judges to these courts, compared to the 55 Obama appointed during his entire presidency. In other words, Trump has appointed nearly as many appellate court judges in 3 years as Obama has appointed in 8 years. And you know who gets some of the credit for this? I mean, aside from the president, Mitch McConnell. Because Mitch McConnell has been ruthlessly effective in getting good judges confirmed. And you know the Democrats want to oppose him. It's one of the reasons it's so crucial to hold the Senate in the upcoming election. At this point in the Obama presidency, Obama had appointed only 24 Court of Appeals judges, meaning that Trump is appointing appellate judges twice as fast as Obama. In other words, Trump has appointed and gotten confirmed 48 judges compared to 24 for Obama? Wow. At a similar point in their presidencies, President George W. Bush had filled only 30 seats on the federal appellate bench. President Clinton, 27. President George H.W. Bush, 31. President Reagan, only 23. Okay, it is dramatic because what Trump has done is appoint judges, all told, to at not twice the rate, but yet, well, actually it is. It is twice the rate of Ronald Reagan. That's pretty amazing. And it is very consequential because, of course, that continues to have an impact for years and years to come. One of the things looking ahead as this impeachment proceeds, and one of the reasons I suspect that the Democrats are so desperate about this whole idea of impeaching the president is the health of Justice Ginsburg. Now, one can only wish her the best. She's been a very gallant lady in fighting desperate illness with four different cancers diagnosed over recent years, and she's overcome them all, and she's continuing at work. But look, it's another year and 2 months. It's another 14 months before another president takes over, even if Trump loses the election. And it is not conceivable. Honestly, it's not conceivable that in the next 4 years, there won't be some of the leading, most prominent justices. And by the way, not just liberals, Clarence Thomas, it is widely reputed. He just gave a wonderful speech at Hillsdale College, by the way, about reason and faith and how they actually fit together. I hope to get to that because Justice Thomas spoke beautifully. But Justice Thomas, who is not elderly, nevertheless, according to people who are close to him, he is a very real possibility for retirement. But so is Stephen Breyer, who's over 80. So is Ruth Ginsburg. And if both Breyer and Ginsburg come up for appointment, if Trump ends up with four, count them, four Supreme Court appointments, then together with the Bush appointments of John Roberts and Sam Alito, this is a very, very deep impact on the court. And then, of course, together with the George H.W. Bush appointment of Clarence Thomas, this then becomes the kind of court that Justice Scalia would look down on and smile. And even more significant, and that's the point that they make in this article, most cases never get to the Supreme Court. The court just heard I believe it's a Nebraska abortion law that required people to look at sonograms and required that people actually indicate what abortion is with patients. And there was a lawsuit that said that violated freedom of speech and interfered inappropriately with a doctor-patient relationship. The court didn't hear the case, which means they let the lower court ruling stand, which is what most often happens. That lower court ruling was, no, the law can go forward. The law is not unconstitutional. It is acceptable. And I think that kind of perspective is precisely what President Trump was trumpeting last night at his speech in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which is that the Republican Party, he says it's more united than ever before. Well, okay, we were very united. Republicans were very united behind President Bush after 9/11, certainly united behind President Reagan pretty much throughout his term, pretty much throughout his term. So, but united now? Yes, certainly. And I think that people can also be united in praise of the way that Lindsey Graham ran the hearings today with Michael Horowitz, and also the way that Michael Horowitz responded. The Lindsey Graham had this to say earlier today about the way the Russia probe was handled. Listen.
You were able to uncover and discover abuse of power I never believed would actually exist in 2019. How bad is it? It was as if J. Edgar Hoover came back to life. The old FBI. The FBI that had a chip on its shoulder and wanted to intimidate people and find out what was going on in your life and the law be damned. Martin Luther King, and just fill in the names.
Okay, and it was a horrible situation, what they did to Dr. King. And they did to Dr. King planting bugs in his hotel room and then sending tapes to his wife and a letter that we now know was composed by someone at the FBI urging Dr. King to commit suicide. This actually is in my book, God's Hand on America, because I have a chapter about Dr. King and his prophetic vision, his prophetic role. And then Ben Sasse reached a conclusion. And Ben Sasse has not been, of course, one of the most reflexive or one-dimensional cheerleaders for President Trump. But on this, he clearly was shocked, as I think many of us are, by the extent of the failures, mistakes, and abuses of power that are revealed in the Horowitz report. Here's Senator Sasse of Nebraska.
And accordingly, today we have initiated an OIG audit that will further examine the FBI's compliance with the Woods procedures in FISA applications that target U.S. persons in both counterintelligence and counterterrorism investigations. That's a big headline. You're saying there is a systematic cultural failure of accountability at the Bureau related to the FISA process. In the American system, when the people get to pick politicians to represent them, for a time, the politicians aren't better people than the bureaucrats, but they're the ones who hold certificates of election. When the people are elected, those politicians incoming don't know as much as the bureaucrats at the top levels of the agencies because the agency experts have been there for a long time. That's what the defensive briefing should be about, not an investigatory Trojan horse.
Thank you, Senator Coons.
Okay, that's Ben Sasse. And then Lindsey Graham was asking questions of Inspector General Horowitz. He's the Inspector General for the Justice Department. It sounded like this.
The Crossfire Hurricane team obtained information from Steele's primary subsource in January 2017 that raised significant questions about the reliability of the Steele reporting. This was particularly noteworthy because the FISA applications relied entirely on information from the primary subsources reporting to support the allegation that Page was coordinating with the Russian government on 2016 U.S. presidential election activities. However, the FBI did not share this information with department lawyers, and it was therefore omitted from the last two renewal applications.
Can you say it wasn't because of political bias?
On decisions regarding those FISA matters, I do not know their state of mind at this point.
Okay, again, and Senator Kennedy asked John Kennedy of Louisiana, in his very folksy way, asked Michael Horowitz, he said, well, I don't want to get too epistemological. Yeah, he said it. I don't want to get too epistemological, but is this an indication that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence? And Horowitz agreed with him. In other words, he is not saying that there was no bias. He is saying he doesn't have conclusive evidence of bias. And he makes clear that his report is actually not and should not be viewed or read as vindication in any sense. Listen.
So let's play this out. They never told Trump about the concerns. Is it fair to say there came a point to where surveilling Carter Page became unlawful?
I will let the court decide that. The court has this report and will make that decision.
Let's put it this way. If you don't have a legal foundation to surveil somebody and you keep doing it, is that bad?
Absolutely.
Is that spying?
It's not. It's illegal surveillance. It's not court-authorized
whatever
surveillance.
Whatever illegal surveillance means, they did it. So all this stuff that they didn't illegally surveil Trump's campaign, they did because they had no legal basis after the January 2017 data dump by the Russian guy to believe that the dossier was reliable. They alter exculpatory information in June of 2017 that would have further proven that Carter Page is not a Russian agent. He was actually working with the CIA.
Okay. The most stunning thing here, and it underlines everything else, and I frankly, they could have talked about it even more, is a fundamental question that nobody has been able to answer so far. Why, if your purpose is to prevent foreign meddling in our election, and every reasonable person agrees, it was Russia. Russia tried to meddle in our election. They did hacking into the DNC. They were bad actors. If you want to prevent any collusion, if you're actually trying to protect America and protect our elections, wouldn't it be appropriate for somebody to come to President Trump, then candidate Trump, or people high ranking in his campaign and say, hey, there have been questions raised about the Russians attempting to influence your campaign. Do you know anything about that? Are you concerned about that? No one ever brought that to Trump's attention because there was a presumption of bad faith. In other words, they were more interested in trying to catch Trump than in trying to actually prevent any collusion. There is a devastating, I mean, just a devastating piece in Rolling Stone by Matt Taibbi, who's been a guest on this show. And he writes, the Guardian headline reads, DOJ internal watchdog report clears FBI of illegal surveillance of Trump advisor. And he writes, if the report released Monday by Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz constitutes a clearing of the FBI, never clear me of anything. Holy God, what a clown show the Trump-Russia investigation was. Like the much-ballyhooed report by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, the Horowitz report is a Rorschach test in which partisans will find what they want to find. Much of the press is concentrating on Horowitz's conclusion that there was no evidence of political bias or improper motivation in the FBI's probe of Donald Trump's Russia contacts. An investigation, Horowitz says, the Bureau had authorized purpose to conduct. Horowitz uses phrases like serious performance failures, describing his 416-page catalog of errors and manipulations as incompetence rather than corruption. This throws water on the notion that the Trump investigation was a vast frame-up. But Taibbi, writing for Rolling Stone, thinks it may have been just that. More comments from AOC. Just wait. We'll be right back on The Medved Show.
TTH.
on the Michael Medved show, you can get the kind of autographed copy of God's Hand on America that a whole bunch of people in a standing room only crowd last night at Discovery Institute got for themselves in person. You can get it at michaelmedved.com. And the new book comes together with a 3-month free subscription as a Medhead. Or if you're already a Medhead member, you can use that status using your Medved code to get a 35% discount on the book. It's a great deal. Go to michaelmedved.com. The Matt Taibbi, who is not some kind of dedicated Trump apologist, writes this. This is in Rolling Stone magazine. No, it's not in National Review. It's not in the American Greatness Journal. This is not in Red State. It's in Rolling Stone. He writes, officials on the Crossfire Hurricane Trump-Russia investigation went to extraordinary, almost comical lengths to seek surveillance authority of figures like former Trump aide Carter Page. In one episode, an FBI attorney inserted the words "not a source" in an email he had received from another governmental agency. This disguised the fact that Page had been an informant for that agency, it's the CIA, and had dutifully told the government in real time about being approached by Russian intelligence. The attorney then passed on the email to an FBI supervisory special agent who signed a FISA warrant application on Page that held those Russian contacts against Page without disclosing his role as an informant. Likewise, the use of reports by ex-spy campaign researcher Christopher Steele in pursuit of Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act FISA authority had far-reaching ramifications. Not only did obtaining a FISA warrant allow authorities a window into other Trump figures with whom Page communicated, they led to a slew of leaked, quote, bombshell, unquote, news that advanced many public misconceptions, including that a court had ruled there was probable cause that a Trump figure was an agent of a foreign power. There are too many to list in one column, but the Horowitz report shows years of breathless headlines were wrong. Some key points: the so-called Steele dossier was actually crucial to the FBI's decision to seek secret surveillance of Page. This is frankly what conservatives have been saying for a long time. Horowitz ratifies the oft-denounced Nunes memo. Now, this came as a real surprise to me. This is, what was it, a year and a half ago? Devin Nunes was attacked by everybody for writing a memo questioning the entire Mueller investigation. Rolling Stone writes, Democrats are not going to want to hear this, since conventional wisdom says former House Intelligence Chief Devin Nunes is a conspiratorial evildoer. But the Horowitz report ratifies the major claims of the infamous Nunes memo. And also he writes this, and I think this is most important. Certainly it's most hard-hitting. The Steele dossier was internet rumor. It's denounced as that in the Horowitz report. And corroboration for the P-tape story? Zero. That's the conclusion of the Inspector General of Michael Horowitz. This is the way he interacted earlier today with Senator Lindsey Graham, who obviously was having a field day. Listen.
Former FBI Director James Comey said this week that your report vindicates him. Is that a fair assessment of your report?
I think the activities we found here don't vindicate anybody who touched this.
Okay.
I think that's an understatement. No one vindicated. Ken Starr commenting on Fox, and Ken Starr, one of the most conscientious, deeply moral, ethical, noble guy, former president of Baylor University, former dean of Pepperdine University Law School, former Solicitor General of the United States and federal court judge. Here's what Judge Starr had to say.
I don't think there's any reasonable dispute that there was a terrible, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it, shocking abuse of the FISA process at the FBI and not infecting the Department of Justice. That's one of the important takeaways, I believe, that the Department of Justice did not have all the information that it needed to have in order to go forward in an honorable way, in a professional way, in an honest way with the FISA court.
That, it seems to me, is undeniable. But I'll tell you what is not undeniable and not helpful. I mentioned that I watched the Trump rally last night at Hershey, and he seemed to be in a good mood, and of course he had an enduring crowd. He had one heckler who was fairly promptly dismissed, but he overstated his case, it seems to me, this way toward the beginning of his talk. Listen.
But while we're delivering historic victories for the American people, the radical left Democrats and the failed Washington establishment are trying to erase your votes, nullify the election, and overthrow our democracy. Not going to happen. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't lose too much sleep over it. And I have to say this about the Republicans. The Republicans, and you have a lot of great ones here tonight, your congressmen, you have a lot of great ones. These congressmen are great. The Republicans have never been so united as they are right now, ever. But the impeachment hoax is about overturning your great 2016 vote, or in the alternative, trying to win the 2020 election. That's not going to happen. Yesterday, the Justice Department's Inspector General released a report detailing the outrageous, scandalous, and unprecedented abuses of power.
Okay, it went on that way. Look, the only point that I would make is, and it's very interesting to try to watch Trump's mind working as he's delivering these lines. He was reading lines from the teleprompter that somebody had written for him, presumably Stephen Miller, who apparently writes most of his speeches. I don't know who it was. But they had he had written a line that the Democrats are trying to overthrow our democracy. And Trump obviously read that line and he thought, this is too much. And it is too much. I mean, overthrow our democracy? They're not trying to do that. And he says, but don't worry about it. This isn't going to happen. I can assure you. It's not going to happen. And that obviously is ad lib. That's the real Trump. And look, it would be better for this whole process if we have more of the tone that Trump took, it seems to me, where he talks about how positive things are. Okay, and now there is a meltdown. I've never seen anything like it. We're going to play it for you. But honestly, you'll have to go to our website and look at it, because you have to see the facial expressions. Don Lemon on CNN was responding not to anything that Trump said in his speech last night, which was generally mild as Trump speeches go. What Don Lemon was responding to was a sort of satirical movie reference that was put out on Twitter by a pro-Trump operation, part of the pro-Trump re-election operation. And it was a reference to the Avengers Endgame movie, where you may remember the special effect. People have seen that movie, that's most people, where all of a sudden people sort of dematerialize because of the villain Thanos. Well, it was a reference to that. And I think it's kind of funny, maybe tasteless. But Don Lemon's reaction is more than kind of funny. It's, I think, overstated. We'll get to it. Okay, the Trump tweet, the Trump team tweet that Don Lemon responds to so with such horror, shows Thanos, the villain played by Josh Brolin. Thanos is gesturing with his big, mighty paw. And then you see sort of the It's like black sand that pulls across the screen and vaporizes Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi and Elliot Engel and Jerry Nadler and the rest of the pro-impeachment Democrats. And the headline, it says inevitable. And basically, it says that Trump's reelection victory is inevitable, and it shows him vaporizing the Democrats pursuing their impeachment. And it's kind of funny. It's a little bit tasteless because it shows people being vaporized like the superheroes in the movie. I think what's distasteful about it is it shows Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler as superheroes. And I don't think they qualify, not in the Marvel universe, not even in the DC superhero universe. Here's what CNN sounded like last night with Don Lemon. This is after the president's speech. Listen.
Trump's war room posted a meme on Twitter today showing Trump as the supervillain Thanos from the Marvel Avengers movies, dispatching his Democratic enemies. Take a look at this.
I am inevitable.
On this solemn day, I recall that the first order of business for members of...
What are we, in junior high school? Like, what the hell? What is this? Like, what? I cannot believe that I'm even having to report this on the news.
He's blinking at the camera, and it looks...
This is crazy. This is literally crazy. Are you people insane? Are you insane?
Okay. That's not all. It continues from Don Lemon on CNN.
Troll the Democrats on Twitter. Do this stupid, silly, you know what? Play this stupid juvenile meme game. History won't record this meme, stupid crap. But history will record this. The seriousness of what is happening. That today is the day that the House of Representatives in the United States of America introduced articles of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States of America, for committing high crimes and misdemeanors.
One of the things that I said last night at my book signing, and that I think is one of the themes of my book, is look, it's very, very risky to predict what history is going to say as history is unfolding. But you can have suspicions sometimes. In other words, you could tell in the midst of the Nixon impeachment scandal, it was bad. It was bad. You weren't clear how it was going to end up, but it wasn't helping the president. And his personal approval ratings went down, 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 after he had just won a 49-state victory. In this case, Don Lemon, it's hard for me to imagine that history is going to look back at this moment, that these articles of impeachment, which are so thin, it's just one page for both articles of impeachment, not even a full page of newspaper that have the articles. And they're flimsy. And given the fact that they're going to be overwhelmingly rejected by the Senate, I didn't see it at the time, but now it's very clear people do not look back on the Clinton impeachment as the right move. Does anybody look back on it right now as the right move? Was it really necessary to tie up our country for all those months with debates about what was on the blue dress? I mean, really?
Are you insane?
Okay, I think that the claims of the Nancy Pelosi's and the Tom Friedmans, who say if we don't impeach Trump, it's the end of democracy? Really? Really? Are you insane? I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me how democracy ends when this impeachment collapses. And meanwhile, another perspective on one of the better movies, a movie that is just released now on DVD and video on demand, but that's already getting a great deal of attention in awards season, particularly by the Golden Globes. We will be hearing about Once Upon a Time. Where? Well, in Hollywood. Listen.
Now, it's time for Medved on Movies.
Leonardo DiCaprio plays a fading star of TV westerns in 1969 Hollywood. In the latest epic from Quentin Tarantino, it's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. New on DVD and video on demand.
I'm Rick Dalton. It's my pleasure.
What is that? That your son?
No, it's my stunt double, Cliff Booth.
Are you an actor?
No, I'm a stuntman.
Yes, he is, and that stuntman is played by Brad Pitt, who plays the DiCaprio character's best and maybe only friend. And these two fictional characters connect fatefully with real-life Hollywood legends, including Bruce Lee, Sharon Tate, and dangerously, Charles Manson.
All right, what's the matter, partner?
It's official, old buddy. Well, has been.
Here I am, flat on my ass. Who I got living next door to me?
I'm Sharon Tate. I'm in the movie.
You're in this?
That's me. I play Miss Carlson, the klutz.
Charlie's gonna dig you.
In this town,
that can all change like that.
And Margot Robbie is perfectly cast as Sharon Tate as the grim, bizarre path to the Manson murders is sketched in loving and persuasive detail. As a work of historical recreation of Hollywood of 50 years ago, though it's nearly 3 hours long, the movie is so well acted, with small roles for the likes of Al Pacino and Bruce Dern, that it's never anything less than fascinating and often funny. For Tarantino fans, the film's a feast, and for those of us who qualify as Tarantino skeptics, it's vastly more entertaining and impressive for all its indulgences than you would expect. It's rated R, of course, for loads of harsh language, sex references, and in its last half hour, an abundance of gruesome violence. There's also, by the way, a major surprise. 3 stars for the artistic and ambitious Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
For more movie reviews, go to michaelmedved.com.
And we are getting dangerously close to that time of the top 10. I'm trying to catch up with all of them. There are very major movies we're going to be reviewing this Friday, including Uncut Gems, where, yes, there is a serious campaign for an Academy Award for Adam Sandler. Yes, that Adam Sandler. It's a serious role. It's not a comedic role. Well, it has its funny moments. Tomorrow, we'll bring you the latest as the House Judiciary Committee is meeting tonight. Yeah, nighttime to begin debating these articles of impeachment. Oh, how I hope enough Democrats come forward to express their skepticism so we can back off this ledge. We'll also talk tomorrow about 2 ladies walk into a bar. Well, a strip club, actually. They're not accompanied by a man, and they're not allowed to go in. A constitutional battle in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This is crazy.